I'm sure most of you here, and I hope most of you here, have heard of Shane Lowry. And if you don't, he was a golfer. He is a golfer. And as an amateur, he won the Irish Open. And among other things, as a professional, he won the Open, which is the British Open, which I think is probably the best major of them all. But most of all, he's probably remembered for something this year. He got that putt that retained the Ryder Cup for Europe. A character-building putt, and he got it. And people think he was cool, and he was cool, and he was great, and he was great. But I wonder to myself, was he nervous? Did he have any doubts? But when he did that dancing celebration on the green afterwards, it was very obvious to me that he certainly did have doubts, but he overcame them. And Maeve spoke earlier about doubts. Thank you for that, Maeve. And Josh said, there are places I remember, and that's what I'm going to ask you now, to indulge with me a little bit as I go back to the environment and the upbringing that I had. And to forgive me a little bit if in some of the stories I tell you, I'm not exactly the hero, but I'm in the stories. I was raised in a town in the west of Ireland. It was a cathedral town. And that meant that the bishop was the parish priest. So the acting parish priest was the administrator. And he had a few curates. And they ruled the town, the church, the parish. They ruled absolutely everything. The president of the golf club was a priest, one of the priests. The chairman of the GAA was one of the priests. The boss or the CEO of the drama society was a priest. They ran absolutely everything. We had no Protestant church there. We had one Protestant, but he was married to a Catholic, and some of his children also Catholics were my friends, so we thought he'd probably be saved all right. The rest of us, we were glad there was no Protestant church, because if we went to a Protestant church, even inside the environments where there's nothing on, we were on the road to hell. And that's the kind of bringing up. And my first memory is when I went to the brothers at the age of 7. And the brother was using this big thing you have for ruling the blackboard. And he turned around, I see some left-handed people here, he said. We know what we do to left-handed people. I was one of the left-handed people. It's the devil's hand, he said. Now, within 2 weeks, I could proficiently write with my right hand. And of course, that was out of fear. But you might be surprised to know that the fear of the brother and his big ruler was only 10%. The real fear for me was I did not want to have the devil's hand. There was no doubt about it. If that man of the cloth said that writing with your left hand is the devil's hand, then he was right. We never doubted anything. In May and October, we had what's known as evening devotions, rosary and benediction. And those of us in the town, if we didn't attend, we were physically punished the next day in school. But we did attend because we had no doubt that's where we should be. That is what we should do. We also had rosary, sometimes a decade of the rosary during class. And I particularly remember one incident where he was talking about the coronation of the Blessed Virgin Mary in heaven. And he gave a magnificent script. The choirs, they were dressed in their Sunday best, even though we're all probably angels and spirits. Lovely hymning, singing and everything. And at the end, Jesus, who was God, reached over and crowned Mary, Queen of Heaven. And we were enraptured. And one of the guys, Pather, he put up his hand and the brother said, yes, Pather. And Pather asked a question that maybe we might have wanted to ask in any other way. He said, were you there, brother? And the brother came down with a red face and literally leathered into him. Now, Pather was wearing Wellingtons. And as the brother went back to his seat, Pather took off a Wellington and threw it at him and got him between the shoulder blades. This is absolutely true. The brother came down to give him another leathering. But one Wellington or not, Pather legged it. There was a great association also between the GAA and that church in those days. And I cannot really explain that it wasn't that the church taught religion or anything like that, but there was a great association. A week or two ago before that, the composition, which you now know today as Essays, I came second in a class of a competition, a holiday I'd like to take, and I was so proud. I wasn't Mr. Academia. And I said, the next one we get, I am going to win it. And the next one was my favorite sport. And I went home to my parents and said, I want to win this. And my father said to me, they'll all be writing about Gaelic football, hurling, or maybe even handball. Pick something different. And both my parents played hockey, so I did one on hockey. Now, these are only sentences, compositions rather than essays. But I did my thing on hockey, and I was hoping for the best. And as they announced the winner, the various people, so-and-so, so marks, so-and-so, so many marks, my name wasn't mentioned. I knew I had won. Oh, this was absolutely wonderful. And when he said, Robin Ward, stand up, I stood up with pride. Well, someone said, pride comes before a fall, and the fall was on the way. The Quislings who sold us out in 1916, one of them is here. I hadn't the guts to tell them. I really was young and I wasn't around in 1916. But I laterally knew what he meant. I didn't know till then that the GAA, they didn't ban foreign games. They banned hockey, cricket, rugby and soccer, the games of British imperialism. Hockey, hockey, get out of here and never come back. Now, I didn't go home with great fear because, after all, my parents was the ones that suggested this. But I arrived home late morning. My mother said to me, what are you doing home? I've been expelled. Well, at that age, you always embellish things. I've been expelled. For what? For writing an essay about hockey. Well, she went into the office and told my father. I think I heard him laughing. I don't know what else happened after that, but I do know now. He rang the bishop. And he knew the bishop well, and the bishop said, I'd collect him at lunchtime and bring him back. So the bishop came at lunchtime and drove him back. Now, I was an altar boy, so I knew the bishop. I didn't stand in great awe. But we chatted about incidental things. He never mentioned hockey. He mentioned the weather, everything. We went back to the school. Very short journey. Knocked quickly on the classroom door. The door opened. And that bishop! Everybody stood up. And the brother came over, went down on one knee and kissed the ring in the bishop's finger. That's what the way they greeted the bishop. I won't disturb you, said the bishop. I'm just bringing Robin Ward back from his lunch. It wasn't mentioned again. But of course, the lads asked me after school. It was an all-boys school. But the brother never mentioned it again. And I'm afraid you're all itching to know, did I win the essay competition? No, I did not. We had fasting during Lent, and I know of women who are pregnant, and they'd ask the priests, could they go off fasting? No. People who wanted to save hay on the Sabbath day, because we're a country town, and it was a fine day, no, they were always refused. So, passing on, I'm now 18, and I'm working in a town in Offaly, and I've already told you, Bridget, this is not Eden Derry. And the Redemptorists come to town. Now, in those days, the Redemptorists were hell, fire, and no redemption. And I often wondered how they called themselves the Redemptorists, because it was the most misnamed order. But among the various things you had to do, or wanted to do, and it was go to confession. So I went to confession, and I don't know if the sins were that serious or not, but the priest then going in on company keeping. I hadn't said anything about company keeping. He said, do you have a girlfriend or anything like that? So I told him I was actually writing twice a week to a girl in the north of Ireland. And he said, do you intend to marry her? Excuse me, Father, I'm 18 years of age. I'm paid monthly and I'm broke for 2 weeks of that month. But do you intend to marry this girl because you're company keeping? This was in the north of Ireland. And I wasn't a man of courage, but I did say, no, he said, if you don't promise me and God that you will stop writing to this girl, I will not give you absolution. So I still said no, and he said, go, and I went out. I could nearly feel the heat of hell as I left the confession box. But the light was on in the curate's box across the way, and he was a nice priest, so I went across, and the first question you'd be asked in confession, if any of you don't know, is how long since your last confession? I just said 2 minutes. Because I was pretty scared. And he asked me what happened. And he chatted to me about it and called me Robin. I thought this was a dark, secret, anonymous place. But he called me Robin. And I was a little bit taken aback. And he said, "She sounds like a nice girl." He said, "Don't you worry about it." And he gave me the absolution. So I left. Saved. There was no doubt. There was no doubt. Maud said, we were not allowed, though. We were not allowed to question anything. And the Jesuit said, "Give me the boy." I'm sure they also meant the girl. "Give me the boy till I'm seven and he'll give you the man." And that's true. Obviously, as I became more and more of an adult, I began to question the odd thing. But they did give me the boy till I'm seven. Not the Jesuits, but the church. And they brainwashed me until I was forever. One priest did say to me one time, "There's more faith in doubt than there is in certainty." And St. Francis of Assisi said that if there is doubt, let me sow faith. And faith, I realized then, was not blind belief, but trust and acceptance and love and all of those things put together. And so I was feeling okay. Until one day I heard, and I've got not her permission, but I told her, I mentioned, I've heard Bridget on the radio, and I decided to come in here, just like Maeve, to see what she had to say. And it was lovely. She told us the various religions, Taoism, Hinduism, Buddhism, the mysteries of the Sufis, and the Islamics, and the Judaism, and other religions, and other people, other members of the congregation here, my own colleagues, also told us about these things. Talking, it was lovely. And I remember one person said to me, "You know, we should not only just talk about religions, we should listen with them and embrace them." And they all were fantastic things. And they did, in a way, know that I had found my spiritual home here, just like Maeve, just like lots of us. Besides the ministers, one of the sermons I liked best, and I have her permission to mention it, and maybe even steal from it, was Jennifer's and Joni Mitchell. I'm hoping that Joni Mitchell will forgive me when I paraphrase one of her songs. "We've looked at life from both sides now, from give and take, and yet somehow, if life's illusions I recall, we really don't know life at all." Amen.